Hi, welcome back to Mob Mentality Show. I am Chris Lucian.
I'm Austin Chadwick.
And today we have William Getz here with us to talk about mob programming and security. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I've been mobbing now for about 4.5 years. And during that time, I've been doing security, I guess you could say, but it wasn't until a few years ago that we really got serious about it, since there's a lot of resources that are out there that many people just don't know. So while we were doing security best practices as best we can, the actual running forward with it really picked up here a couple of years ago, and that's been really, really awesome to be able to
participate awesome. In. So. Well, okay, so I think that brings us to our first topic, and let's talk about learning security. What are good ways to learn about security, and how are we, how do you get it at least maybe minimum viable security into your system, and what do you do to get to more?
So we're talking about minimum viable security. If you're working in the .NET sphere of things, and you use ASP.NET, either MVC or the .NET Core version, just using that gives you a lot of help. You have to actively fight against the architecture, in order to stop doing security type stuff. Mm. There's a lot of there's style guides and stuff out there, but to really get into application security and what you can do to defend yourself against attackers, is kind of a bit of a black box at the moment, right? It's important. We all know it's important, but every time we talk about security, frequently it will go to, why is someone going to be trying to attack my application? It's a small application. It's hosted in Amazon. Isn't that okay? I'm using Azure. Isn't that okay? Because there's not a lot of broadcasted resources, and the ones that are out there are seemingly daunting. We hear about data breaches all the time,
yep.
And we hear about things like Heartbleed and all these scary intrusions into the network. And it always kind of starts with the network. So we push back and we say, okay, well, the network engineers have it, right? As long as we have our firewalls defined, we're okay. Mm. Many of us who do web development have heard of something called the top 10 list, right? Mm. The top 10 list of web vulnerabilities. And that comes from an organization called OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project.
One of the two.
Yes, the Open Web Application Security Project. And they are a nonprofit organization of security engineers and white hat hackers,
mm-hmm.
who have come together to try to broadcast, to try to teach as many people as would listen, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're a developer or a consumer or whoever, about what is out there for you to protect yourself against and what resources you have to protect yourself with. The approach is, for a good portion of them, the approach isn't, let's get out there and try to hack our applications. Troy Hunt has an awesome resource called Hack Yourself First.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Pluralsight. I don't know if it's hosted anywhere else.
I think Pluralsight is one of their demo courses,
okay.
that are hosted for free, I believe. I tend to send people there when they're interested about security. Let's get past the minimum viable stuff.
Sorry.
Like, what resources would you point people to if they're trying to strengthen them? And given this is a little bit of a talk about mob programming, how does mobbing help with the learning of that security, especially cross-functionally?
Mobbing helps with security because, well, first of all, it helps because you're all sharing resources.
Yeah.
You're sharing knowledge, you're sharing information. Everybody's got a little bit of an idea of what to do. When you're growing up in the software community, we talk about sanitization of our inputs.
Mm-hmm.
We want to prevent SQL injections. We sanitize our SQL. Using the OWASP top 10 as a diving board, as sort of a launching path, as a diving board, you can go from the first element in that list down to the last element, and they have things called cheat sheets,
mm-hmm.
Available on their website. And it'll describe what the vulnerability is. So
mm-hmm.
number one is injection,
yeah.
right? Injection attack, it's been up there for well over a decade. It's
mm-hmm.
not going away. and people who are interested in what that means will help the fellow developers protect against it, because it's not just SQL injection, it's XML injection, it's JSON injection, it is there's CSS injection now, right? Yeah. There's all AD injection, there's all sorts of really fun injection things that occur that would really make your day incredibly miserable. And if you're taking an interest in expanding your knowledge of application security, starting with the top 10 list and looking at just starting with the first one. Mm-hmm. That we want to get rid of that. We do not want injection attacks at number one anymore. Even if it goes down to number two, that's a win.
Yeah.
But learning about what that is and then seeing how it applies to your application.
Yeah.
They do a good job explaining what it is, and the cheat sheets give you some semblance of an idea of kind of what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But moving from there to YouTube videos.
Yeah.
It's easy to just type in hacking and see things from Black Hat or DEF CON, where you've got security researchers, talking about how we hacked into Jeep using their entertainment system.
Yeah.
How did the target attack happen? And how did it starts talking again about attackers.
Yeah.
So you move that away to help with your learning. You move away from attacking by and large, because most of us don't think that way.
Right? Yeah.
And so we move away from attacking to defending.
Mm-hmm.
Using injection as an example, we're trying to prevent people from getting access to our database.
Yeah.
So what do we do to do that?
Yeah.
Well, there's sanitization libraries out there.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the framework that you're working in,
yeah,
that's what you do. And when you mob, you share that information. You say, wait, hold on. Rather than trying to do our own work, rather than trying to write some sort of sanitization library ourselves to try to escape the code,
yeah,
why don't we use a library that already exists? In .NET, you have a few different libraries that you can use. And once you, for using SQL injection, you can use Entity Framework to help parameterize your SQL.
Yeah.
It's
kind of on by default in most cases.
Most cases, right? But a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. So while mobbing, I think in the past, I can't say how many times I've said, don't do string interpolation for SQL, and then parameterize your SQL instead. And it's just, and mobbers that I'm with, they're just like, what do you mean? And then that, so maybe what you're saying is mobbing allows that information to travel either cross-functionally or even just between software developers' heads to say, hey, look, I learned a long time ago that this is a bad thing and this is new to you now, but this is why we don't do it.
Yeah.
And so mobbing kind of inherently maybe sparks the security flame, so to speak.
Definitely. And I can actually share a story about that.
Fantastic.
Because when I first started mobbing, I actually got to be in the same multi-mob as Will.
That was a lot of fun.
We spent about a year or so mobbing, multi-mobbing together. So we weren't on the same mob.
But
because of your passion for security, we were retrospecting on our definition of done.
Yeah.
And so two things got into that definition of done for the multi-mob for that product was scout rule and security, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and what was great with mobbing was that we were working on a feature that was related to security, and Will wasn't on our mob, and we were the one working on this feature. And we were just like, okay, this is obviously related to security. We have some ideas, and we just pulled you in, and you started whiteboarding, you know what I mean? And I think that kind of helps with the overwhelmingness of security is people help. So mobbing definitely helps with that, right? You don't have to know everything and you can draw on the experiences of others. But then also just, scouting it. You know, you are where you are and then you're scouting to the next level, right?
Yes.
And that's one thing maybe you can talk about a little bit about is I thought you kind of brought that together. It was like Agile, Scout Rule, and security and threat modeling. I felt like you did a great combination of those things where you can say, I think, and this is a different product, but we you weren't in our mob, but we invited you.
Mm-hmm.
You threat modeled with us.
Yes.
And then we said, hey, how can we scout to take it to the next level?
Yeah.
Without us being experts, we can know enough to do that.
Right? Yeah.
So how does threat modeling help, I guess, an Agile team or a mob?
Okay.
Iterate to the next step.
So threat modeling helps because it stimulates conversation. So when we do our feature development or we're doing our bug fixes, frequently we'll go to a whiteboard and we'll just do some sort of very quick diagram of the problem at hand. We're trying to fix a bug that does one thing, or we're trying to put a feature in that allows someone to do something else. And in order to talk about the code in a higher level way without having to pull up the code, we talk about the different modules and how they interplay with each other. When you're doing that, you just start asking yourself, okay, well, where does this stuff live? You know, some of the stuff that we work with lives in a cloud environment. Some of the stuff that we work with lives on premises. So you just start drawing lines and separating out, like, well, this stuff is on-prem and this stuff is in the cloud. And when we're talking about taking user information as they put it into the computer and it goes up to the cloud to do whatever it is our cloud does, what information are we transferring? Mm-hmm. How is it getting there? And then you can just start asking those questions, which will bring up very interesting results and very interesting conversations. Because again, you want to stimulate the conversation. And that leads to those, like, well, are we using TLS, right? Are we using transport layer security? Depending on the application you're working on, there's different versions of it. But then someone may not necessarily know what that means. And you start using acronyms and people go, well, wait a minute, what is TLS? What is SSL? Yeah. What is...
People should feel safe asking those questions too, right? They can't get shut down when asking those questions. So having a safe environment is also important.
So bringing it back around with the conversations and not addressing, but expanding on the topic what was stimulated was the idea that we're at where we're at. You can only start where you are. Mm-hmm. And again, going back to security being an incredibly daunting thing, you get this top 10 list and you start looking at your application code and you think, oh my gosh, there's so much here.
Yeah, I don't know everything in my code. Yeah.
At once, right? Yeah. And what Agile really helps us do is it helps us narrow our focus. Whether you work in a 2-week sprint environment or like a no sprint environment or just kind of whatever it is, you gotta focus on what you're doing at the time. And the Scout rule being leave the code better than you found it.
Yes.
Whether that's going through and doing some renames to clarify what parameters are doing or extracting methods, you're doing these little iterative changes to make things a little easier for the next person who comes along. Because eventually, maybe even yourself.
And so does that include sanitization and parameterization?
It does. Yeah, okay. It does. And that leads it to this thing where when you're working on this code and you have the discussions about security in this small focused sphere of development, you really can tackle it. It's like, how do you eat an elephant, right? Yeah. To use the metaphor, you eat it a little bit at a time, right? Yeah. You know, we can apply it to any number of things, right? But our applications didn't start out hundreds of thousands or millions of lines with just like tons of modules every left, right, sideways. Mm. They started out small. They started out with small ideas. And so the changes inside your code base are those small changes. And the journey to security is through small changes and through lots of discussion. Because there's a lot to do. And sometimes you can't do anything. The only thing you can really do is just say, well, we know there's a problem and we don't know how to fix it. And that's okay because we've captured it. Where I work, if we have a problem that we can't necessarily fix, we consider it a bug, right? I mean, even if we can fix it, but if the application is behaving in a way that we don't expect, that's a bug. And so we chart that. So we
Arlo.
Arlo's definition of a bug.
I went a little further back. Yeah. But Arlo Belshi is a phenomenal resource for things like that. But but by capturing them in bugs and then talking about it with your product owner, because now we're gonna expand that because it goes beyond the developer team.
Yeah.
It goes from developer team to your product owner to IS. And it goes up through the entire company, and it's kind of daunting. It's really kind of scary because there is just so much. We've got lots of we have the California Consumer Protection Act, which comes into effect here at the beginning of 2020. There is of course already GDPR, and I regretfully do not know what that acronym stands for anymore because we've been kind of focused on California of late. But you've got these regulations coming into effect that are really impacting the way that we discuss how things are built and we discuss how we communicate with each other. And it's now an end-to-end business concern. It's no longer do the devs know what they're doing. It is, are we able to communicate with each other? And it needs it needs that cooperation and that gelling of all of our teams in order to do it. So having a good product owner that you can talk to and say, look, you know, we can implement this feature, but what we have to do in order to get there is we have to make sure that we do this, that, and the other thing. We've got these bugs. You know, we're accepting user input that is unsanitized, but business logic requires that it comes in unsanitized. And so in order to put that into a place where we can actually use it, we've got a lot of work that we have to do. And now that it's been brought up, then the product owner has that responsibility of saying, well, I can say no and push back on it, but now you're increasing your risk. And the thing that we try to do is not just push out features, not just deliver awesome software for people to use, but we also kind of want to reduce the amount of risk that our companies are exposed to using the best tools that we have at the time.
Yeah, and so I think from my experience, from seeing everything you just talked about happen in a mobbing environment, you know, we were talking in previous episodes about the siloing that occurs when deployment and ops is separated from the team. And the same thing can happen if, you know, security is separated from the development team. And the amazing natural thing that just happened with mobbing is that it just kind of spread around. You have one person who's passionate about it and people are interested and they start learning. If you have good communication with your product owner, they start becoming educated. Just by the fact of having a knowledgeable security person mobbing with the rest of the team, you know, and they can really kickstart your diffusion of innovation. If you security is a problem and you want that collective ownership to start kicking in, you know.
So just like we had everybody that was doing automated testing join the team, or manual testing join the team and mob, having that security presence, the DevOps presence, the databases presence, and being in the mobs, then you achieve the next level flow efficiency. I wanted to kind of like grab on to what you're talking about with the product owner and talk about championing the security concerns of the application. What have been some effective methods for you for championing security on a team?
Well, the biggest thing is to be inviting. So there's a lot of horror stories of security departments coming out and saying, here's a big document and fix it. The place where I work, we actually really had a phenomenal security auditing team that when they produced their reports, they had a list of the steps that they used to reproduce it, as you know, which included what inputs they used, what tools they used, what techniques they used to find vulnerabilities or potential vulnerabilities, as well as the steps to replicate it. Very nice, because it meant that we as developers could replicate. We could actually validate. Is this something that is really a concern, or was this maybe perhaps a problem with we didn't expose them to the right kind of environment? But that whole being inviting and not coming in kicking and saying, we must do this and we must do that, and creating an environment that people want to learn. Is really important, and that's where championing comes in, because anybody can learn security, but not everybody necessarily wants to. Some people they just really want to deliver features. They love doing stuff that they can just do, and that's okay. We all have our we all have what excites us, but finding that person who is really excited about security, who can talk about it in a way that excites other people, is really phenomenal. So I got really excited because of OWASP, and they have conferences. The one that I go to every year, and I'm going to try to go to again this year, is AppSec California. It's in Santa Monica, but they have conferences all over the world. And by and large, they try to record as much of them as possible and put them up on their YouTube channel. But going to these conferences and talking to people who you would otherwise not have access to, people who are in... they're doing government level security, or they're advising, you know, panels. Like I spoke to some people who were from the EU who did, who were consultants for the EU cybersecurity team. I spoke to people who worked at Dow Jones Industrial, who were working on security for securing the top 100 companies. And these people that you wouldn't necessarily be able to just pick out and talk to. Super incredible, super inviting, very, very comfortable to talk to. And they are more than happy to share what their knowledge is and how things go. And that excites me. You know, I've brought that back the last couple of years. And this upcoming year, we've got four people at least going from the mob to go to AppSec California.
Cool.
And there's, you know, speaking to other people,
that championing has been spreading. And
yes.
It's kind of like, you know, I always go back to diffusion of innovation, right? And just saying early adopters, even conference attendance can be a diffusion of innovation curve, right?
Learning time and conferences are a great way to fire that up.
Yeah. Awesome. Security doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. It's you can't do it alone.
Cool.
You know, there's people that I work with who have been in the industry for 15, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
maybe more. And I'm able to lean on them with their experience to help. And there's one guy that I work with who, when I was talking about, when we were doing whiteboarding and stuff like that, about and threat modeling, he took a step back and he looked at everything and he said, oh, okay, well, I kind of think I have a way to solve some of these problems. And we worked together to create some tests that would run rather quickly to prove that, one, there was this vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
and two, that the vulnerability is now dealt with
with
the changes to the application code before it even went out to customers.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you start where you start,
mm-hmm.
and then you just sort of continue, and it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to talk to these people and to talk to your coworkers.
So I had a question for both you guys.
Yeah.
So I'm earlier in my security journey,
mm-hmm.
in a previous company, I almost became a security specialist.
Cool.
And so I read a little bit on it, but then didn't go that route.
Yeah.
And then, you know, where we're currently mobbing, I've learned quite a bit in the last year. So something I've come across a couple times, I'm interested how you guys handle it, is either someone on the development team or in the business just does not care. I've heard a few quotes like, I do not care about security, like when you bring it up, you know, whether it's, you know, business, marketing, or development. Like, how have you guys handled that to help show that it matters?
Yeah. Well, so I can talk a little bit about my personal belief on that. So going back to Arlo's definition of a bug, my personal thought there is that, you know, the team should be empowered to enforce it. Anybody really should be empowered to call shenanigans on a security style thing. So if you say, if you have a philosophy of zero bugs in production and you call a security hole a bug, then that pulls the power back into the like process requirement, right? There are other ways of doing it, right? You can just say no critical security holes, no critical or high security holes, or, you know, talk about impact versus frequency. But a lot of it is going to be, you know, come down to the business centered financial trade-offs. And so, the main thing is that security in depth, I think, is a really important thing. And I don't know, maybe you can expand on that, but, personally, I believe that you amplify the voice of security,
mm-hmm.
maybe as a leader, right? Then rather than shut it down.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to deal with psychological safety and
mm-hmm.
being able to say, I disagree with you. I think we should put security in. And I've seen environments, I've worked in environments where it was taboo to kind of talk about security because it was too expensive to deal with.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
So giving it a voice, I think, is important to me.
Giving it a voice is very important. And depending on where you work, there are different approaches to take. In some large organizations, you can appeal towards your security team, from what I understand. I've had the good fortune of working in companies that security is major. So I worked in medical records. I've worked in patent law. I've worked in some, you know, like an incredible research, you know, scientific research facility. And even though where I work right now, it's not necessarily, there's not a lot of it's not as high stakes security.
Mm-hmm.
I'm empowered to bring things along and to drive security home.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I go back to, it depends on where you work and it depends on what tools you have available to you. You can't force someone to do something that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you are able to do that, then you're going to just build resentment. Again, the biggest thing is inviting people along.
Yeah.
However, there is a line, and how that gets drawn is really a conversation to have with your team and your boss.
Well, that's why CCPA and GDPR exist, right? Is because that too many companies in the past have taken the wrong choice down this path, yeah. Right?
So, we could call it the wrong choice, they made the decision that they felt was the best.
Yeah, exactly.
And going back to try to remediate any sort of problem seems too daunting. So it was easier to just sort of hide from it than it was to move forward, or to just say, well, we'll get to it, and it's in the backlog, but we've got to fix this first or that first. I personally don't believe that there's really anybody out there who wants to intentionally expose themselves or expose their company to risk. And so if we take the approach that nobody nobody in development is actively trying to harm themselves or their company, then it comes down to a matter of like, well, how are resources allocated? How are those discussions being had?
Process problem over a people problem.
Right. So, because it's, if, you know, talking about GDPR and CCPA, right. If you have a product owner who says, no, I don't care about security, and their product is the one that leads to the data breach, that could be a major problem. Mm-hmm. In an agile, you can bring that up. It's like, well, in California, and I think it was 2018, I believe the statistic is for every record released in a data breach, it costs the company about $220. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the size of data breaches, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a terrible, terrible amount.
I watched some of the stuff like Have You Been Pwned or any of the other resources on just being aware of these hacks, and I mean they're enormous expenses to those companies.
They can cost millions of dollars.
So seeing you two in action, I think dealing with skepticism regarding security is you start talking about what matters to them, right?
Yes.
So if it's money, you start talking money. Yeah, like, what are the costs of not having security, right? If they're all about their product, you know, I've seen you guys send out videos showing a related product being hacked and, you know, something bad happened. You know what I mean? So appeal to the story. You appeal to what matters to them and say, like, here are the risks.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, how does this fall in priority now? You know?
Yeah. So, no, but it's definitely a champion activity is basically making a subject relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about the center enter turn.
Yes, Esther Derby and Don Gray. It's been huge. Her teachings have been huge, and being able to be a security champion. Because it's more than just having an interest in security and wanting to bring it on board. It's the ability to really have good quality conversations about it and not just point at someone's code and say, see, this code is bad. But like to say, see, we have an opportunity.
Yeah.
Agile has a bit of a leg up in that degree because during our sprint planning, we can have those small threat modeling sessions.
Mm-hmm.
There are some good resources for that. And we'll put them in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Show notes. Linking at the moment.
Good list is compiling.
Yeah, for sure. But in sprint planning, you can kind of bring it up and you just sort of add it to the tasks of things that need to be done. Because depending on what you're working on, if you're working on a web product, you're going to have to build APIs anyway.
Mm.
So add security to that, right? Yeah. That could just be part of the process, right? And it's not being disingenuous and it's not being secretive, right? You're being paid to be a professional and professionals don't cut corners.
Yeah.
But there are some companies that will push back and those and their risk team will say, we will accept this risk.
Mm-hmm.
This particular application you're working on, we recognize that there are problems and you want to try to remediate them, but we will accept that risk.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you've done your due diligence, right? You've done your due diligence and that's all you can really do.
So push security to the edges of wherever it gets stopped within your power, right?
Yeah.
Now, there are some people who actually have said that if you're not willing to lose your job, to fight for security, then you yourself are security vulnerability. I've been thinking about that, and it kind of goes back to stuff that you were talking about as far as fearless leadership.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're afraid to talk about a security vulnerability to your manager or to your coworkers or to your boss, then that's a problem. We can talk about the idea of psychological safety that goes in there. But if you're afraid to bring it up, then that's a process problem. That's a people problem. And what is it that you're worried about? If you're worried that you might lose your job, then what would it look like if that breach happened? You knew about it and you didn't bring it up. Even if it didn't go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
How 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 could how would you feel about that? You could
somehow potentially be liable or yes. vulnerable in some oh, way. Yeah. And so, you know, in both ways, maybe yeah. the job is at risk, right? But environments where, my belief is psychologically unsafe environments mm-hmm. are a lot of the time, you know, 99.9% of the time, not environments worth staying in. Yeah. And so, you know, that is part of it. It's like, if you can't say it because you feel like your job is vulnerable, mm-hmm. then you can always find a new job and say it on your way out, right? Because that's always an option to yeah. anybody, right?
Mm. So interesting.
I worked, before I got into software, I did commercial tenant improvement, and I was mm-hmm. a carpenter there. And we worked on a building in a part of town that was densely populated. And it was raining, and it was really just kind of miserable work when you're outside. Inside, it was nice. When you're outside, it was kind of miserable. Mm-hmm. And we had to put in an elevator shaft. We had to remove a bunch of stairs, and then we had to open up the walls in order to be able to add the supports that are necessary in order to, in order to support the elevator. Mm-hmm. And in opening the wall, we discovered that that the 2x4s that run across the concrete and support the entire structure had rotted out.
No.
So the building had been there for a good 20 years, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. it's raining, you know, there are probably leaks. Like, who knows? Who yeah. knows what led to them being rotted out?
The unknown unknowns.
We were responsible. We couldn't yeah. just say, well, it's out of the scope of work. We'll just ignore it. They're like, yeah. well, you can't do that, right? Yeah. So what wound up happening is we tore everything out until we didn't see the rot anymore, and we talked to the superintendent. And because it was an elevator shaft, there was inspections that needed to be had, and so we had to we kind of had to stop the work for a little bit, more, yeah. but we had to do it. It had to be done.
You stop the line for quality, right?
You have to
Toyota
do it.
Toyota lean manufacturing, yep. software mm-hmm. lean, software lean creation, right?
Yep. So it's yeah. worth doing.
It's worth right? stopping it's the line stopping for the for line. A vulnerability you see mm-hmm. and. Whatever the result is, yep. at least you said something.
Yeah.
yeah.
And there's the community is really supportive. Mm-hmm. Again, I go back to OWASP because they've yeah. been the biggest, biggest advocate that I found. Just accessible. The whole organization. Super accessible. I've talked to people from Blizzard and from yeah. Riot and from Netflix and from Amazon and
yeah.
They're there and they're accessible and yeah. they're willing to talk about what they do in order to ensure that security happens.
Awesome.
And to give you tips on where to start, right? Yeah. And a lot of times where you start is you just start with the threat model and a conversation. And you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know how to do diagramming,
yeah.
right? You don't have to spend years studying UML or understanding what a data flow diagram is or process diagram or like this or that. You just start with a picture and you label it and you draw lines.
Yeah.
It's like Edward Tufte, right? Edward Tufte is like, you get your diagram and you talk about it and then you talk about it more and yeah, you keep yeah. putting data on it until there's enough there that you kind of understand, but it doesn't obfuscate everything. Okay. So.
All
right. Yeah.
Cool.
So right I think we're approaching our time box.
Okay.
And so I don't know if there's any other parting comments that you want to leave us with or any good resources for people. Maybe that platform that we learned on that one time might yes. be a good resource.
That's a phenomenal. Yeah. I'm super yeah. excited about that. So we hear about data breaches all the time. We hear about websites that have these vulnerabilities inside of them that lead to like, oh, it does SQL injection or cross-site scripting and other kinds of scary terms that people who aren't familiar with it, it is yeah. actually kind of scary. So OWASP also has a fleet of applications that have been designed to help train and teach and gain understanding about what security means. And there was an application that was developed by Bjorn Kamenimich. I'm so sorry.
We'll put a link in the show notes for
butchering the name. Yeah. but it is called the Juice Shop, the OWASP Juice Shop. It is it's a flagship OWASP application, which means it's been vetted and it's awesome. It's open source.
Yeah.
So you can go and you can get it. You can and what it is, it's intentionally designed to be incredibly vulnerable. It's got over yeah. 80 known vulnerabilities, and Bjorn himself has said, "I don't know if there's anything else in there."
Yeah.
You know, it's we open source it, we quality control, yeah. and it's Node.js. It is Angular Next or Angular 8. It's whatever the newest Angular is. It has I believe, a relational backend, and it's got a small NoSQL front end. Mm-hmm. And the really cool thing about it is it's gamified. Mm-hmm. So the first challenge when you find the website,
it's a store where you can buy juice, right? It's called Juice Shop. I didn't really catch that until I actually saw the application.
Yeah. So it's the benefit of our listeners. It's like a web store. It's designed to be like something you'd see on Etsy or whatever, right? And so you load up the application and you run it locally. Mm-hmm. Because this is also really important, right? Before I start talking about the really cool stuff here, is unless you own it, don't try to hack it. So if you're at work and you get permission from your boss to try to do these things, that's great. You're running on your corporate computer, on corporate network, and you don't reach out to the internet. Yeah. You watch some of these things, some of these videos, like the Troy Hunt Hack Yourself First. I had a coworker who said, oh, now that I know what this stuff is, I'm going to try to go ahead and see what my uncle's website has.
Commit to a federal offense or something, unintentionally.
I think it's like 2 felonies, at least in the States, for every hack that you do, because it's committing.
So don't do that.
It's bad.
Yeah.
And, but in either case, so mm-hmm. but this tool is designed to be trained, right? Yeah. Heroku, I believe, has said that, heck, you can host it. Amazon, you can host it, right? Yeah, the only things are don't try to do a denial of service attack.
Yeah, DDoS attacks.
Right, or attack their infrastructure.
But what's really cool is it records your progress.
Yes.
And allows
you. And not only does it record your progress, but it gives you hints on what to do. Yeah. So you'll see
the... Records your progress, you're trying to hack the site.
Yeah, trying to hack the site. Yeah. So you're going to do some... minor SQL injection, and you perform it, and then you get points for performing the SQL injection on the site.
And if you don't know how to do something, because there's a scoreboard, that's the first challenge, find the scoreboard. Once you found the scoreboard, you can hover over the challenge, and it will give you a hint. You tried putting this in, or have you tried doing that?
Yeah.
If you still don't get it, like me, right? There's a lot of things in there, and just like the easy level that I had no clue how to do. There's an actual ebook that you can go to, and we'll give you more hints, but we'll also talk about the vulnerabilities that were baked into that application and what they are as far as where they map on the OWASP top 10. Yeah. Also, on the common web vulnerability CWEs, and then also solutions.
Yeah.
Like if you're just dead stuck, you can go to the solution, and then as a developer who doesn't hack, right, you can see,
you develop empathy for the hacker, and therefore you can defend yourself better.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So thank you for explaining that. I think that it's really valuable. It's worth a resource worth checking out.
Yes.
We actually did this in mobs and had many people mobbing
with
non-developers as well. And so when we mobbed it, and you know, we'll put on a really great kind of training where we brought a lot of people in from different parts of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody worked on it, and everybody kind of developed an understanding of what we were vulnerable to and potentially from all of these different vulnerabilities. And so it gives you a good understanding of the OWASP mm-hmm. top 10. And through OWASP, you can now figure out remediations for your applications.
Yep.
So that hits it for time.
Yes.
So thank you very much, Will, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Please stay safe, stay secure, and we'll see you next time. Bye from the Mob Mentality Show. Please share this video if you know somebody has concerns about security.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.